America got news of yet another mass shooting on Tuesday, this one in Northern California. Kevin Jansen Neal went on a rampage, killing five people and injuring several more before he was killed by police. Now, police originally thought there were four deaths, but Tehama County Assistant Sheriff Phil Johnston had this development on Wednesday.
We were looking for his wife. We couldn't find her yesterday. We located her dead body. Concealed under the floor of the residence last night. She was an obvious victim of several gunshot wounds.
Neal, like many of the suspects behind recent mass shootings, had a history of domestic abuse and harassment of his neighbors. Now, federal law prevents people convicted of domestic abuse from buying guns. So how do people like Neal fall through the cracks and offend again, often with firearms, after they're already on law enforcement's radar? Alex Yablon is a reporter at The Trace, a nonprofit news outlet focusing on gun-related reporting. Alex, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
You know, in case after case, we see violent criminals, in this case, mass shootings, but not just mass shootings, that have a history of domestic abuse. So what do we know about the connection between domestic abuse and later violence, whether it's a big high-profile mass shooting or not?
You know, it's one of the clearest risk factors that clinicians have identified. A Duke psychologist, Jeff Swanson, told me people don't just start out committing murders. They tend to engage in escalating patterns of violence, and you might go from verbally abusing the people in your family to physically abusing them to physically harming strangers. So it's a very, very clear connection.
So violence predicts violence. The science is very, very clear on that,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
So what does the law say about people who are convicted of domestic abuse and whether they can keep their guns or buy a gun later?
Well, federal law says that anyone who's committed a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence or any felony that has a jail term of a year or more, which covers a lot of felony crimes of domestic violence, or anyone who's been who's subject to a domestic violence restraining order is banned from owning guns or buying new ones. But it's not as simple as that. That's what the law says, but enforcement is a whole another can of worms. It really comes down to state and local authorities to actually get the guns out of people's hands. They may not be able to pass a federal background check at a licensed gun dealer, but they may be able to keep a hold of guns they owned before they were prohibited. They may be able to buy from, you know, private individuals in a state that doesn't have universal background checks.
So, Alex, what it sounds like you're saying is that in the real world, yes, federal law says if you're convicted of domestic abuse, you can't have guns. But we're talking about thousands, tens of thousands of cases every day, unfortunately. And the cops aren't going to your home and knocking on the door and saying, hi, we're here for a sweep. Give us all your guns.
Right. It can, to a frustrating degree, operate on the honor system. I was speaking to a lawyer in California who files he works for a battered women's shelter, and he said, you know, we file a lot of restraining orders here. The judge will say at the end of the proceeding, do you have any guns? You know, you can't own any guns. And the defendant will say, no, I don't have any guns, or I understand I can't have any guns anymore, but that's the end of that. You know, only in a handful of places, Seattle increasingly is one, do cops actually go to a domestic abuser's home and say, and actually look for a gun.
If researchers, if the science has said that domestic abuse really does predict later violence, and the law says that you want to keep guns out of the hands of domestic abusers, it seems like more law enforcement agencies would recognize an opportunity when there's a conviction to really prevent not only the big high-profile mass shootings that we always talk about, but some of the day-to-day violence that we hear about, where if a gun weren't in the room and you could predict the likelihood of some violent behavior in the future, maybe there's some prevention that could be done.
Yes, absolutely. There's a big opportunity there to actually get guns out of the hands of people who we already agree shouldn't have them. The issue is really one of resources. It's costly to send police to go execute these search warrants, and it can be dangerous. Police are more likely to be injured or killed on domestic violence-related calls than any other kind of call. So it's not without risks to law enforcement, but there's a lot of potential upside.
Alex, you talk about it as a question of resources, but I also wonder about the question of culture, not only around the true danger of domestic abuse, but also around guns themselves. Yes, there's a federal law that says a convicted abuser can't have guns. Maybe in a lot of police departments, they say, this is not really a reason for me to go and take someone's guns. They have constitutional right maybe to have guns.
You know, I couldn't say that I've come across such a explicit resistance, but there may be, you know, a kind of a lack of awareness that, you know, you really have to go that last mile. You know, judges may not realize that they're just kind of taking someone's say-so. Or, you know, I believe in this case in California, the local sheriff who is responsible for enforcing the restraining orders against the suspect, Mr. Neal, wasn't initially aware that he was prohibited from owning guns. Only later, when, you know, someone actually checked the court documents, did they come back and tell the sheriff that actually this guy should never have had any guns.
Talk about some of the loopholes in the real world that police or judges confront if a domestic abuser is banned from having guns. I mean, that person might be banned from having guns. They might live in a house with four other people.
Right. It may be difficult to ban them from possession of guns or living in the same home as guns. Probably one of the biggest, though, is that in the vast majority of states, 32 states, you can legally buy a gun from a private individual without going through a background check and what's called a private sale. In the entire country, if you buy a gun from a licensed dealer, no matter where you are, you have to go through a background check. But in 32 states, you can just buy it from a friend or someone that you arrange a sale with on the internet. There's a website called Arms List that's sort of like Craigslist for guns. There are also issues just with paperwork. Not every court system is going to make it clear in the same way that someone has committed a crime of domestic violence. They may have a charge for assault, and if you were to read the charging documents, you might say it might be clear that it was a domestic assault. But say if you're a background check examiner, you'd have to do extra work to see, oh, this was a domestic violence case. This person shouldn't be able to buy a gun.
The connection between domestic abuse and later violence and firearms in America. Alex Yablon with The Trace. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.